please welcome in our new sponsor, Fishing Clash. Download Fishing Clash for free right now on your mobile phone by typing in Fishing Clash in the search bar of your Google Play or App Store. Open the menu in the top right-hand corner, choose the gift code section, and input my special code Taskmaster to get an awesome reward for a total value of $20. Enjoy a chilling atmosphere after a hard-working day. Get familiar with different types of fish species and their habits. You can choose one or two, or you know what you like the most. Explore amazing fishing spots worldwide from Florida to Kamchatka. Whether you prefer fly fishing, ice fishing, trolling, you'll admire the look of all the fishing spots available in this game. This game will help you remember how you went fishing with your dad when you were a kid. So download Fishing Clash today for free on your mobile phone by typing in Fishing Clash in the search bar of the Google Play or App Store. Open the menu in the top right-hand corner, choose gift code section, and input the special code Taskmaster to get a total value of $20. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the Fishing Clash, as it is a great casual time killer. Hello and welcome to Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. I am your host, GP John Paz. Of course, with me, the star of the show, former WWE and ECW World Tag Team Champion, the former great legendary booker. He's also one of the greatest minds ever in the history of the business. The man behind the 83 weeks of dominance. He is Mr. Taskmaster, Mr. Devil himself, Mr. Games Master, Kevin Sullivan. Kevin, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing excellent. How are you, my friend?
Doing good, doing good. I can't complain. But in this crazy wrestling world, there's always something going on. There's always some sort of, some sort of craziness, some sort of mischief, right? I mean, it never ends in this wrestling business, what's going on out there.
Yeah, and I think it's, because people follow our business and our fans. I think it's like this in almost every business. Can you imagine what the Hollywood business must be like? It must be completely insane.
Nuts, yep. And it's funny, like, it just never ends. Like, you know what I mean? Like, news cycles and stuff, like wrestling, it just never ends. It's like always something going on, whether it's WWE selling or, you know, whatever. Vince's mustache, I mean, something's always going on in wrestling.
Yeah. Does Vince still have the mustache?
Yeah, he does. You like it, or what do you think about that?
I think it's a parody. Years ago, even before my time, I used to catch it when I was a kid. It was reruns from a long time ago. There used to be a detective called Boston Blackie, and he had that same type of mustache. In fact, it was a song, I Want to Have... I think it came out in the 80s. I want to wear a mustache just like Boston Blackie did. It's just so ridiculous, isn't it?
Oh, my God. Yeah, he looks like a cartoon character.
Yeah. I just didn't understand, because Vince was always immaculate, dressed and coiffured and, you know. But, hey, he could do whatever he wants.
And he was always anti-facial hair, right? I mean, he never had facial hair. He always shaved it and stuff.
Yeah, he was always against facial hair. Hey, you know something? Remember we were talking about what they were worth.
The, yeah, yep.
Did you see where the Washington football team sold for only $6
billion? Yep. So they're worth more than them, which is crazy. Yeah, they're pretty much worth more than every football team, right? Maybe except for the Cowboys.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we were talking about.
Yep.
The Cowboys and in baseball, it would be the Yankees and Dodgers.
Yep.
And maybe the Red Sox. I don't think anything in basketball, and definitely not anything in hockey.
No. Nope.
So, I mean, think about that. And he took it over, what, 83?
Just about, yep.
Yeah, pretty crazy. Pretty crazy.
Man, just the value of it, $9.3 billion. When he first said he wanted $9 billion, people thought it was crazy. And literally, it's worth a little bit more than that. So, I mean, he was pretty dead on the money, and he's pretty accurate of what he thought it was worth, what he could get for it. So, pretty smart move. And obviously, you had to keep him around. A member of people were saying, oh, get rid of him. He's going to make the company worth less. He obviously made it worth way more.
Right. And didn't he end up with 9.6?
Something like that. Yeah. Yep.
Crazy.
And remember when he bought it from his dad back in 83, he only bought it for $1 million.
Wow.
So that's like, what, a 900% increase, whatever you want to call it. Yeah. Yeah. Insane. Yep. Imagine that investment. I'm going to put $1 million into it. Oh, really? $1 million? Okay. And then I'm going to end up selling it 40 years later for $9.3 billion. Crazy.
I think that's a 900% increase, right? Or 900,000.
Right, at least. Yeah. I don't know the math of it, but I mean, it's just, it's a lot. Yeah, it's a big number. But as far as today and the topic at hand, we want to talk about a guy you were saying was one of your all-time favorites, and I'd love to understand why. I mean, not that he wouldn't be, but I'm just curious to learn a little more about that. But Ravishing Rick Rude, the legendary Rick Rude. So first off, why is he one of your favorites? Why can be said? You said that before we started recording.
He was a great guy. He was a great guy. We were great friends. I mean, very good friends. I met him in Florida when he was with Percy Pringle, who was the pallbearer. And Percy was a good friend of mine. We hung around a lot together. He was a great athlete. He had hands like Billy Gunn is the only person's hands that I could relate that were like Rick's. I mean, you shake hands with Billy Gunn, it's like putting your hand in a vise, in a catcher's mitt size vise. I mean, and he was a great athlete, Rick, you know what I mean? And he had a great sense of humor. But he was also, he was wired pretty tight.
Meaning that he just...
he was ready to explode.
Right, he could blow off the handle, right?
Yeah.
So when you first met him, that was in what, the mid-80s in Florida in 1985-ish?
Yeah.
What'd you think about him? Or did you know about him beforehand? Did you not know? Like, what'd you think about him?
I had heard the name. I think he was in Texas before he came to Florida. Yeah, I'm pretty sure because that's where him and Percy hooked up. And I just, you know, he had an amazing looking physique. His work was very snug at the time, but not stiff that he hurt people. He's just snug. I thought him and Percy made a great team. And he was a very, you know, he came from that whole Minnesota crowd, which produced nothing but great talent.
Unbelievable. And you had mentioned it before, all those awesome guys in Minnesota. You thought he might have been the toughest of all those guys that came from Minnesota.
Without a doubt, I think he was the toughest. I think they all kind of... agreed that he was the toughest.
When you look at that, What about him, like, made him so tough? I mean, obviously, strong as hell. Yeah, a lot of stories about him throwing a good right hand, or really good both hands. I mean, he's got lead in his hands. He got really good punches, you know, from what you've heard of, like, street fights and stuff. But what about him made him so tough?
You said his punches. I mean, his tendon strength and the size of his hands. I mean, they were like hammers. He was a double tough guy.
When you look at kind of where he came from in that Minnesota area, are you kind of, I don't know, like when you're bringing talent in and stuff, do you guys scout like certain areas? Like, do you say, oh, Minnesota, if this guy's from Minnesota, oh, he's going to be good? Is that something that, like, within the business you guys would see, like, oh, Rude's from Minnesota, he must be good? Is that just like a preconceived notion?
Well, I think there's a lot to say about it, but I mean, you know, they didn't say, oh, he's from the Oakland area, or he's from the Bay Area, he's got to be good. It was just that so many guys came out of Minnesota before Rick that had set a high standard in the business. You know, Rick Flair, Ken Patera, the late, great Henning, you know, he was, Mr. Perfect was a hell of an athlete, great performer. So the people that came from there, you know, they had set a standard bearer. And they had a lot of great guys come from that area. And it was like, almost like the same neighborhood, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
They all went to the same was Robbinsdale High School.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's pretty amazing.
When you look at Rude and you see him in 85, like, did you think he was good at that point? You think he was green? Like, what were your thoughts on him?
Oh, I thought he was one of the people that just take it like duck takes the water. He was very good. Very good talker right out of the chute. He was just an exceptional piece of talent.
Because he really kind of starts in the early 80s, really kind of like 1982, you know, setting his feet in the ground there. Starts in Mid-Atlantic for a little bit. He'll work there for, you know, for a time. Then he'll work in Georgia Championship Wrestling. Then he'll go to Mid-South. You know, nothing big, but, you know, he's slowly making his way and, you know, building himself up, if you will, through 82, 83, 84. Then in early 84, he ends up in CWA in Memphis. And that's kind of where he creates Rick Rude. Before, he's Rick Rude, R-O-O-D, how you would normally spell his name. But then he goes to Memphis and Jerry Jarrett gets a hold of him and he becomes Rick Rude, R-U-D-E. Kind of just fits, right? For a heel, I mean, Rude. I mean, his name is Rude. Let's just change the spelling. And I was saying they changed the name Rick Rude, R-O-O-D, to R-U-D-E when he gets to Memphis. Kind of fits perfectly, right, character-wise, synergy-wise?
Yes, absolutely. Sorry about that. I don't get a phone call ever before or after you, you know what I mean? It's always when we go on the thing. It happens all the time.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
So what do you think about Ricky Rude? Just changing the name, like that little thing, he goes from kind of being like, okay, job guy, Rick Rude, R-O-O-D, to Rick Rude. And it, I don't know, it just makes the character, to me, stand out even more.
Did Rick actually start in Memphis?
No, so he started before that in Mid-Atlantic, then Georgia, then Mid-South, then made his way to Memphis in 84.
So he started with the Crockett's because of Nikita being there?
I would think so. Timing wise, I would think so, because they were both Eddie Sharkey guys, both trained right by him. So it just seems like that would be like, hey, let's bring him over too. Let's, you know, he's an enhancement guy, and obviously Nikita got the big push, but right, it's almost like, okay, let's see what we got here. Then we'll move him off to another territory to let him create his character.
Let me ask you something. I only, you know, Eddie Sharkey is a legendary name in the wrestling business, correct?
Yes.
I met him one time a few years back. I forget what WrestleMania was at. It might have been the one in the Anaheim show, wasn't it? They did one for about 6-7 years. Piper was still alive at the Anaheim show in California.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep.
I think it was there. I met him for a few minutes. Did he actually run opposition to Vern?
Technically, yes, for a time. Yes.
Okay. So maybe Rude started with him?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, Rude didn't go to the AWA. So Rude right. started with him, and then Sharkey would send you other ways because Sharkey and Vern had a falling out and it didn't quite work out. But Sharkey, you know, he became like the trainer to the stars. I know Vern was in the 70s, but Sharkey kind of became that in the 80s.
Yes, because the Road Warriors were his guys.
Yep. Smash. Wow. Yep. Bunch of guys. Yeah.
Yeah. A bunch of guys. Brady Boone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Tommy Zink, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just funny, like that area, that Robbinsdale High School you're talking about before. Tom Zink, Brady Boone, Nikita Koloff, John Nord, Barry Darso, Kurt Hennig, Rick Rude. I mean, just crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
All well, yeah, great in the business.
Yeah, it's like the Tampa Bay area, you know?
Yep.
Yeah.
So when you look back at Ricky Rude and he's in CWA, in Memphis, you know, he's getting a little feud with Jimmy Valiant, Macho Man Randy Savage, a big time feud with Jerry the King Lawler. So, I mean, it's one of the things where he's definitely learning not only to work in the business, but he's working with some, you know, King Kong Bundy. I mean, he's working with some high level guys. So, I mean, he's really learning his craft from some of the best.
Right, right, right.
Is that important, you think?
What?
Is that like really important? Because it seems like that's what a lot of the guys are missing today. It seems like a lot of the guys are working with guys their same age and their same skill level. So like nobody's really kind of breaking out. Like if you want to be working with somebody better, right? You would think.
Yeah, yeah. To me, and you know, it's a whole different world out there. I mean, from society in general to sports, it's wholly totally different. But you would think. People get better when they're around people that drew money, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean to belittle anybody at this statement, right? When you go to the training center, everybody is being taught the same way. So they're mass producing. And this is no knock because technically they're doing a very good job of producing guys. But it doesn't give you a little bit of variety. I think I've mentioned this before, Jimmy.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in the wrestling, you would see a guy come in. You wouldn't know where he was, but you'd watch him and you knew whether he came from San Francisco or he came from the Carolinas or he came from Georgia, because each area had a different style. And it was good because, we'll say the guy comes to Florida, he adapts to the Florida style, but he adds the spice of where he came from. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
And it made it not so repetitious. So I think Rude, that was a perfect thing for him to work with those guys because he had worked with guys that drew money, especially Lawler.
Oof. Big time money from Jerry the King Lawler.
Yeah.
Then after that, then he ends up in Florida. Then after Florida, he goes to Florida, to World Class.
Right.
So he basically ends up in Florida right after running with Lawler. And he kind of gets like a big push right away in Florida. Did Eddie Graham really, you know, did he really like Rudy?
Dusty, I believe, was the booker then. And I mean, the guy looked fabulous. And I'm sure Eddie liked him too. But the guy looked fabulous. And then when he went to Texas, became their world heavyweight champion.
Yep. Pretty much, yeah. And he became a big star down there in Texas. But in Florida, it's funny, like, he's there, right, for a while, basically a year or so. He and you only crossed paths once that I could find. Do you know if you had more than one match against Rick Rude or no?
No, I was a heel and he was a heel. And very, very seldom did heels work against heels in Florida.
Really, the only match I could find was on October 20th, 1985, the Army of Darkness, which is, of course, you, Maha Singh, and the Cuban Assassin defeated Blackjack Mulligan, Kendall Windham, and Rick Rude from the Eddie Graham Sports Stadium in Orlando, Florida. That's the only match you guys had that I could find.
So maybe Rude had turned babyface because he was with the Mulligans, right?
Right.
Must have turned babyface for a short run right before he left.
Did you like Bob Roop as Maha Singh? I know this is a random one, but did you like him in that gimmick?
Yeah, because he had been in Florida quite a bit. Came in as a babyface, switched heel after he had been to the Olympics. The story about him. I was in Georgia, in Knoxville, when Knoxville's waning days, when Jack Mulligan bought the territory from the Crockett's. And they had really raped him over the coals. I was the booker for Jack. And they would tell me, they'd give me Flair and Steamboat, right? For Friday night in Knoxville. And I'd plug that coming soon, right? For about 3 weeks. Wednesday, they call me and say, we have to pull Mulligan, not Mulligan, Flair and Steamboat from you. I think they were trying to put Jack out of business. So somewhere down the line, somebody gave Mulligan a chance to send guys to Atlanta. And I was working in Atlanta and Knoxville, which is, they're not far apart, you know what I mean? 200 miles. So I had known Bob before when we were workers, and we had a great run. I've mentioned this to you. Nobody ever talks about this, but I had a great run in San Francisco with Bob. We worked four matches in a row, the main event in the Cow Palace. We were doing between 12 and 15,000 people. And then later on, Roop got into that plan B, right? Do you remember what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. We actually remember a while ago we talked to Ron Fuller about it.
Yeah. And I was that plan B. He got blackballed because of that. But Ole Anderson liked him and brought him in. And brought him into Georgia. And I saw the writing on the wall. Things were, you know, there was real turmoil there in Atlanta. You remember that? The Briscoes were selling it. And
yes.
Everything was up in the air. So I called to go back to Florida, and I had saw Dusty, and Dusty wanted me to come back. And then I called Mike, and I said, listen, I'm going to ask you a question, and I know it's going to be hard for you to swallow. I said, can I bring Roop in with me? Roop came up with that idea. And this is before I had the idea of the cult-like figure. He wanted to shave half his head. And I thought, wow. And I called Mike and he said, the only way he's coming in if you take full responsibility for him. But Bob had drawn money there. So, you know, they kind of we'll pardon you if you've drawn money. So he drew money, and yeah, it gave them a sense of relief that he came to and became that character. And also, they thought because he did that, he kind of acquiesced to them. You know what I'm saying?
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. Yep. So just going back to Ricky Rude, we were talking about how he basically, he loses to Wahoo McDaniel for the, Wahoo retains his NWA Florida Southern heavyweight title. Then he's gone and heads off to World Class. Like you mentioned, he's beaten Iceman King Parsons to win the NWA American title. I mean, he's getting quite a big run. He's feuding with Devon Erics a bit. He's, you know, he's beaten Brian Adias and Missing Link and John Tatum. I mean, there's a bunch of guys that he's in there with. He's beating Lance Von Erich for the TV title. I mean, he's in there with a bunch of big guys and getting a bunch of big matches and getting a huge opportunity against not only the Von Erichs, but Bruiser Brody as well. So it feels like he's, again, moving up the card, making a big name for himself. Chris Adams, too, if you want to throw his name in the bucket. But it just seems like with Ricky Rude, he's always on the projection up. Like, he always seems to be climbing up wherever he's going, right?
Right. I mean, he was, phenomenal body. I mean, his abs were incredible, right? He was a handsome guy. The girls, the audience loved him. The guys hated him. He was a perfect guy to be a heel.
When he goes to back after he loses to Chris Adams, he goes from World Class to Mid-Atlantic again. I guess Dusty is the one that's kind of the proponent of bringing him in and teaming him with Manny Fernandez. They have a feud with the Rock and Roll Express, and they actually end up beating the Rock and Roll Express in 86, towards the end of 86, and they win the NWA, really, tag team titles. Is that like Dusty's thing? Dusty liked him in Florida. He brings him into Mid-Atlantic and gives him a nice push, and you know he's going to basically be champion again.
Yeah, how could you not like a guy that draws money? You know what I mean? He was intense. He was very intense on his job. I mean, I don't ever remember, any incident where he didn't show up. I mean, he was very good he was very professional, let's put it that way.
When you see that him and Manny Fernandez win the tag title, it's not like it's kind of a thrown together team. Did you think at that point, it's like, oh, that's kind of interesting. I mean, they got so many good tag teams there. Midnight Express, the Horsemen are there. The Road Warriors are there. There's so many good tag teams. Was it kind of weird to give Manny Fernandez and Rick Rude the tag titles? Or was it just so, it looks like Rock and Roll Express are down and out. And then they obviously retain the titles.
Let me ask you this question. Why do you think it'd be strange?
Just because they were kind of thrown together. And they won the titles pretty quickly. So, to me, it almost felt like, wow, they really were having the titles get them over rather than them be over and them get the titles over. You know what I mean?
Those guys are the kind of guys that get over instantly.
Okay.
Their work was so solid. You know what I mean? Back then, Manny had just come out of college. And, there's another West Texas boy, right? So we know about the long lineage of the West Texas guys. And then Rude, I don't think anybody looked better than Rude in the business at that time. Maybe the Ultimate Warrior, but Rude to me even looked better than the Warrior. So, they were so snug and everything they did was so intense. They deserved the belts back then. And that was perfect time for the Rock and Roll to do a job. And because the Rock and Roll was so over, it's a lot easier to get heels over beating a team like the Rock and Roll Express.
When you look at it, too, they hold the titles for about 6 months or so. So, I mean, they did have a decent run with the tag titles, and the Rock and Roll Express end up beating them to get the titles back. But pretty good run in Mid-Atlantic, I would say, for Rude and Manny Fernandez.
Yeah, I think so. And, Dusty, majority of the time, didn't want to flip the belts. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So, I think that's a good thing. I mean, it's like, think about this. Guys are 16 times, 21 times world heavyweight champion. Does that sound even feasible?
It's crazy. It's insane.
Yeah. Yeah.
I hate it. Yep, I hate it. Except for if it's Flair. I mean, somebody, but he wrestled for 40 years. So, I mean,
right.
And he was on top for a while. But yet, nowadays, it's just nuts how many the title changes. But in 1987, Rick Rude goes to the WWF. Vince McMahon gets him, really pumps up his character, gives him great theme song. He's ravishing. He's really kind of making these awesome tights where he really is making his character even more like just hated, like, you know, shut up sweat hogs, the drawings in the tights. Sometimes it's Cheryl Roberts' face on basically his penis of the tights. So, I mean, he was pretty vulgar, some of the stuff, but obviously great heel work though. I mean, just superb heel work from Rude. The fans hated him.
Well, he was very, very good. And like you said, he had the music, the tights, and you got to remember where he was. He was in the cradle of the Bible Belt. So that had to really go up those fans' ass. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And that thing, which Jake's wife, that was really, really edgy.
Yep.
That was Attitude Era before Attitude Era, don't you think?
Yeah, that was intense for sure. Yeah, and that made the feud great though. Made it very memorable.
Yeah, I don't know how really in that part of the United States they got away with that.
It's funny, like with some of the stuff that they kind of got away with back then. Obviously, you wouldn't be able to get away with it now, but like that, the stuff with Rude and his tights and stuff, and sometimes, you know, pantsing him and him showing his ass literally on TV. I mean, it's funny, like what they get to get away with, and you wouldn't think they would have gotten away with it then, but they did.
Right. Especially there. Especially there. I mean, that was the home of Jimmy Swaggart and Tammy Faye Baker and Jim Baker, Jerry Falwell's colleges in that area. The whole Pentecostal Faith Hill scene is in that area. I don't know how they got away with that.
When you look at Rick Rude in WWF, do you think, I know he's a part of the Heenan family and it legitimizes him and gives them great credibility because Heenan was one of the most over heels basically ever, but really in WWF at that time during that Hogan era, he was huge over as a heel. Do you think Rude needed Heenan or was he better alone? Because Rude always says he doesn't need anybody to cut promos. He's an awesome promo guy.
Yeah, he really is, but Bobby Heenan is one in a million. You know what I mean?
Do you think they created some heat with Rude and Heenan? Because it seemed like there was a little bit of riff with them because Rude felt like he didn't need him and Heenan was maybe taking some of his heat.
Are you surmising that? Or?
No, it's been said by both of them. No, it's been said by both of them.
Okay. I didn't realize that. But
Bobby
didn't
kind of understand it, but Rick said yes, there was some heat there because of that.
I can see Rick doing that. I mean, there's a lot of great talkers that think about this. Superstar Billy Graham was as hot as anybody I ever saw before he took the belt from Bruno when he came in, right?
Yep.
And after he took the belt. Yet, they gave him the Grand Wizard to be manager. And the Grand Wizard took up TV time. But Billy absolutely loved to have the Wizard. So it's how people perceive things for their own positioning. You know, yep. Billy, I absolutely, you know, Billy and I are friends, and when I had the run with Billy, I asked him, I said, Billy, you can, you know, you're one of the greatest talkers of all time. He said, yeah, but he added a different dimension, and he knew when to stop talking and to lead me into something. So Billy made it work. Do you know what I mean? It made it a positive rather than a negative.
Yeah, so it just seemed like maybe Rude just didn't agree with it or didn't want it, didn't think he needed it.
Yeah, and I also found, and again, this is no disrespect, a lot of those guys from Minnesota had a little bit of paranoia in them. And I'm wondering if that came from Sharkey or working for Vern or whatever. Do you know what I mean?
Yep, definitely.
Yeah.
It seemed like, I don't know, not that they were like bitter or anything, but it just seemed like they were like extra paranoid about some things. Like, oh, well, what do I need heat for? I'm an awesome talker. You don't think I'm a good talker? This guy's going to take heat from
me. Yeah. Yeah. And I saw that with all of them, you know, Hawk and, you know, that Hawk and Randy thing probably never should have happened. And they just had a animal too, God bless them. And, you know, they all had a little bit of paranoia in them. And it must have been how they were trained or the psychology that Sharkey or Vern was teaching, you know. And, you know, for Vern, they had, who's the guy that was the Olympian that trained them? Brad Riggins, a great guy. Brad Riggins, I mean, so there was a lot of, you know, and he trained them very tough. You know what I mean? They trained in a barn in the winter, man, in Minnesota. So there was a little bit of paranoia there with those guys. So rather than saying, you know, and then that's funny that he didn't feel that when he was with Percy.
Yeah. Yeah. He never heard that. Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
So
maybe he felt maybe Heenan was a little overbearing. I don't know. Weird.
Or Bobby was very, very super over. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yes.
But I thought they were a good team.
Me too. Unbelievable. Because when Rude beats Warrior, basically Warrior was like unstoppable, but he beats him at WrestleMania 5. Rude beats him for the Intercontinental Championship. Heenan was a big part of helping him.
Yeah.
So I know obviously Warrior gets it back at SummerSlam, but man, that was huge at the time because it's like, wow, Rude just beat Warrior. Wow, I thought Warrior was unstoppable.
Yeah, yeah.
Good feud. I always liked the Rude Warrior feud. It's funny because Warrior obviously has his fault, and you know he's not the greatest worker in the world, quote unquote, and you know this and that. But Rude was, man, he could carry him to great matches that go 20, 30 minutes. I mean, he could really carry Warrior.
Yeah, it's funny how things have changed because of the internet, and like you say, you turn on the YouTube. There's just flocks of shoot interviews. Everybody's got a talk show.
Yep.
Back then, they didn't know much on the inside. There were a lot of people that he drew a lot of money, the Warrior.
Oh, big time.
Yeah. So it wasn't that people actually understood work rate. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
Meltzer wasn't on the internet giving 5-star matches, or you know, people just didn't understand what work rate was. So he drew a lot of money. Yeah.
Yeah, it didn't matter. Star power, charisma, drawing money. I mean, he was a huge, huge star. Rude knew how to work with him. So did Macho Man. So did DiBiase. I mean, there's guys that knew how to work with him. And like, hey, we're going to draw money. We're going to complain that this guy, you might be a little stiff in the ring. I mean, it was just good on Rude and Savage and guys like that could work with Warrior. Hogan, too. I mean, had a great match with Warrior.
Right.
So as Rick Rude's kind of time is coming up in the WWF, really, I don't know if he maybe felt he should have been world champion or not. That's been out there by him. I know he had a great feud with Roddy Piper, too, kind of on the way out. But it almost felt like he never got to that zenith in WWF as far as world title, but he would get a lot of world title matches. He would have a bunch of great matches with with the Ultimate Warrior for the title, including SummerSlam 1990, where it was a cage match, which was the main event of that big show, which was the return of Hulk Hogan too. So the Heat returns SummerSlam 1990 from the Spectrum, and Philly PA Warrior beat Rude in about 10 minutes to retain the title, but he never kind of got to the mountaintop. Do you think that he should have or could have been WWF World Champion?
You know, when we talked about Roman Reigns and Cody, right?
Mm-hmm.
How could you, who would he have beaten? Hulk?
No, that's crazy. But yeah, maybe, right?
But I mean, who could he have beaten Hulk?
I guess Warrior, I guess. And then Warrior could have won it back. I don't know. I wouldn't have had him beat Hulk. No, I wouldn't have anybody beat Hulk. No.
Right.
Except Warrior, except when Warrior did it. But I wouldn't have, before that, I wouldn't have had anybody beat him.
Yeah, so, okay. He's not going to beat, you've decided he's not going to beat Hulk. And then you built that whole angle around your territory around Hulk and Warrior, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're not going to beat the Warrior coming off that match. So when would he get the shot?
Hmm. That is true. It like it, sometimes people just say stuff like, oh, Piper should have been champion. But when? Like, you know what I mean? You throw it out, but like, you're right. You have to actually have to think about it. Like, I don't know if Rude would have fit as WWF World Champion. Could have been. He was good enough to be one, but I don't know if he fit.
And then, do you remember when before WrestleMania and I said he has to win, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
This backlash has started to recede, hasn't it? Because the 1,000 days,
yep,
they've come out. You know, remember I said to you before, they get a plan for the bloodline.
Yes.
The story gets better and better, doesn't it?
For sure, yep. Now the Usos are in trouble, yeah, for sure.
They got Roman at right at 1,000 days, I guess. The next time he defends the title will be over 1,000 days, right?
Yep.
I believe they're going to keep this going to the next WrestleMania.
Seems like it. Might as well at this point.
Yeah.
Might as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
So with Ricky Rude leaves WWF, comes to WCW in 1991. He does the funny thing at Halloween Havoc where he's like the Phantom, but you could tell it's Rick Rude. I mean, it was obvious it was Rude, but he starts immediately with a great feud with Sting. He's a U.S. champion. He's in the Dangerous Alliance, which was a great faction led by Paul Heyman. I mean, he had an awesome run in WCW. He was technically the world champion because he defeated Flair, even though it's like the NWA title turned the international title. It was still the big gold belt, and it was still technically the world title. So he's technically a world champion in WCW. Did you like that? Do you think that he deserved to be world champion in WCW?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. He was fabulous. Yeah.
He was great. I feel like not untapped potential, but I feel like he kind of reached where he wanted to in WCW because awesome matches with Sting, you know, U.S. champion, awesome matches with Ricky Steamboat, great matches with Dustin Rhodes, Big Boss Man. I mean, there was a Nikita Koloff. There's a bunch of awesome matches, Vader. But then it's like, okay, great matches and everything. What can we do to kind of elevate him? And he becomes world champion and he beats Ric Flair and he has a good feud with Flair. So although some of the matches were a little bit wonky because it was like, I don't know, Flair was kind of playing heel, but Rick Rude was the heel. It was a little bit off. I kind of like Flair better as the heel and maybe somebody else as the babyface, but you know, Rude was the heel and he wins the title. I don't know. I just felt like finally we're getting Rick Rude to be a world champion and he deserved it.
So what didn't you really like about it? What was your main?
With the Flair feud? I don't know. The matches were just a little wonky. Just like the chemistry was a little off for some reason. They were good to a point, but they weren't great.
And I'm not so sure if it wasn't personal between them. Do you know what I mean?
Really? What was going on between those two? They didn't like each other?
It wasn't that they didn't like each other. Just sometimes you just don't click with a guy. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And you know what I mean? Well, guys get really protective of their spot. And when you see Rick Rude across the ring from you, how cosmetically, how great he is, do you know what I mean?
Yep.
So there's a lot to, you know, the only thing about wrestling that isn't a shoot is the 1, 2, 3, you know what I mean?
Yep.
So.
Yep.
There could have been something there.
It's interesting. So he beats Ric Flair. Rude, of course, beats Flair, Fall Brawl 93. Then he holds the title for about 180 days, about 6 months or so, loses to Hiroshi Hase in Japan, wins it back from Hase in Japan, basically a week later. Then he loses it, a great match against Sting at Spring Stampede 94. Then wrestling Danaku in Japan in an awesome match, Rick Rude defeats Sting to become three-time international champion, a.k.a. three-time WCW International World Heavyweight Champion. But that is the match that basically breaks Rick Rude's neck. Crazy, awesome match, but at the end, this is, of course, 5-1, 1994. Sting does a plancha, basically suicide dive out to the outside. And the way the stage is, Rick Rude's head is here and the stage is here, and it kind of crushes his neck. He's able to finish the match, and he kind of cheats and wins the match, and it's a good finish. But obviously, you find out afterwards when he's traveling home, broke his neck.
Wasn't the stage a circular stage on top of a flat stage?
Yes, and it had an elevation to it. Yeah, it was weird.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder why that was designed that way.
I guess it was like almost picking it up. So, because, you know, it's the big crowd. It was the Fudoka Dome. But, I mean, it's a big crowd. Maybe so people all the way far back can see as it's elevated. I mean, it's a huge place. It was 55,000 people in attendance. I mean, it's a huge, huge venue.
Right, but why wasn't it built like a square rather than a circle?
I have no idea. I'm not sure. Yeah. Weird. Yep.
Yeah.
But that definitely ended up screwing. I mean, obviously, it ended his career right then and there.
Right.
Did he think he could return? Do you know anything like about that as far as his neck?
He was one of the many, many Minneapolis boys that had Lloyd's of London.
Yes. So you can't return, right? Unless you want to get back that $400,000 insurance policy, right?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
I know he got in a bit of a tough tussle with Bischoff because, you know, he comes back, he goes to WWF as a manager. He's like the insurance policy, literally the insurance policy for Shawn Michaels. Then he goes to ECW for a bit, or, you know, whatever, vice versa on that one. But he basically goes to ECW, makes his return, does some good stuff in ECW, kind of a little bit of a feud with the franchise, doesn't wrestle, but does get in there physically and does do the Rude Awakening and things like that. Then goes to WWF, DX, does some physical stuff, then goes to WCW after the Montreal Screwjob. He was pissed. He becomes Kurt Hennig's manager. He's on Nitro and Raw on the same night, which was nuts. I mean, what an epic thing to do. He's on Raw because it was taped. He's on Nitro when it's live. He says he's part of the NWO. But apparently he gets some heat with Bischoff because he said, hey, pay off the Lloyd's of London, $400,000. Then pay me to wrestle and I can return. Bischoff said, no, I literally can't get that approved. How am I going to get that approved?
And here's the thing. I was there when Rick was involved in that situation. How could Eric go to Turner and say, with a guy that's had his neck broken, right,
yep,
and out because of his injury, say, we need a payback, $400,000. And we need to give him $850,000 plus first class airfare, you know, everything upgraded. They would have thought he was crazy, wouldn't they have?
Yeah, because you technically wouldn't you have to pay a salary too? So it's not $400,000, it's probably $800,000. You know what I mean? And that's salary money.
No, I don't know what you meant by that, $800,000.
So you'd have to pay back $400,000 to, right, Lloyd's of London, which Bischoff would have done. But wouldn't you have to pay Rude a salary for the year? Let's say, I know.
That's why I said $1 million. That's what I'm
right,
saying.
Right. That's what I mean. 800 or a million. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So 800 or a million. Now you got, and you're paying that on top of a guy that's had a salary. You're giving him a big salary and a first class airfare,
exactly,
and all that.
Yep.
Who broke his neck.
Yeah, and I know he was training to get back, but who knows what kind of shape. I mean, he looked physically good, but who knows if he could really do it.
He could have done it.
So you think that his training for the comeback, I mean, obviously had things not happen. I mean, he could have, excuse me, could have wrestled again.
Oh, I definitely do, yeah. Yeah.
When you look at that, I mean, it makes sense from Bischoff's part, but his family apparently kicked Bischoff out of his funeral when he passed. Like they were mad at him. I guess Rick had said, "Oh, he's not not letting me wrestle. I can't wrestle. He's not going to pay back the policy." Also, it might be a slippery slope legally. You know what I mean? The guy is healthy, and you're going to pay back the policy.
Absolutely, it'd be a slippery slope because, again, Eric is just—I believe Eric was just in there a couple of years at the time, right? When mm-hmm. this happened, he's trying to go along with corporate also. They would have thought, what is wrong with you guys? No disrespect to Rick, but he wasn't Hulk Hogan. Do you know what I mean? Yep. Most of those guys in the North Tower probably didn't know who Rick Rude is. But when he lays this out, and then who had the liability for hiring a guy with a broken neck.
Right. Yep. Yep. And who paid back the insurance policy and why are we paying him $1 million? Yeah. Yep.
And if he gets hurt,
Yeah. I mean, you're liable. Yep.
This is why I laugh when people say stuff. They don't think through on business end. It's the wrestling business. And if you're in the North Tower, that's your job. They're not going to say, oh, yeah, sure, he looks like he's in good shape now. Bring him in, he's got a broken neck when they had 157 lawsuits and paid off every one of them. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
People just don't understand. There was a whole different ball of wax, that's all.
So, of course, we were kind of alluding to it, but he unfortunately died April 20th, 1999. He was only 40 years old. It was an accidental overdose. Do you think that he was into, I know he was doing some stuff to get back, but do you think he was always kind of, into, I know he drank a lot and stuff like that, but was he always into, like, there's rumors of, like, injecting himself with this, him being the guinea pig for that, like, this is a good steroid, that's not. Was he always into the steroids and stuff?
I never heard of him thinking about the guinea pig thing. Where did that come from?
Jake and a bunch of other guys in shoot interviews, they always allude to it that Rude didn't care. Like he thought, he's like invincible. First of all, I mean, he looked like $1 million. So they would say, obviously, like maybe you test it out and see if you like it. I mean, he would know, what's good and what's not good. But that's been in Jake the Snake and a bunch of other guys in shoot interviews have alluded to it and different stuff like that. I don't know if that's true. I think Jake or somebody else also alluded to him injecting his penis with something like, you always hear weird stuff in these shoots. And I don't know what's true and what's not. There's no proof of any of this, but that's the rumor.
Injecting his penis with what?
Cialis or whatever, Viagra or something, because he wanted to be extra virile. I have no idea.
Wow. They just take a life of their own, don't they?
Yeah. I don't know. That one is kind of weird. It's like, well, how did that come up in conversation? Like, okay. It's weird. I don't believe it, but I mean, whatever.
I mean, I don't know, but that's, who knows? But I mean, the steroid thing, I mean.
Everybody was using.
Yeah, I would think at least 75%, if not higher.
And him, Luger, Warrior, Kerry Von Erich, I know all those guys were using, but they have the best body. So, I mean. Good for them in a certain aspect that they can get that look and other guys maybe couldn't, but I don't know if that attributed to him dying at such an early age because, obviously steroids, heart, everything else is not good.
Isn't it funny that now doctors almost automatically give them to anybody at 40 years old or older?
Yeah, very, very strange. I know it's so easy to get because I got a buddy of mine who's, entering into the later 40s, and he was saying how easy it is to get, like, testosterone and steroids and this and that. It's crazy, yeah.
It's replacement, hormone yep. replacement, they call it. But yep. Here's the thing. Guys were taking month's supply in 2 days. That's what why they bought.
Dangerous amount.
Yeah, dangerous amount. I mean, I always say I'm surprised more guys didn't die.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it puts so much pressure on your heart to pump. You know, just think of this. When you have all that muscle, your heart either has to get bigger, smaller, or harder. You know what I mean? And that's not a good thing to have. So,
yep.
Yeah.
When you look at Rick Rude and obviously the untimely death, I mean, way early, he's only 40 years old. Like, what do you look back at the legacy of Rick Rude? He's one of my all-time favorites. Like you said, he was one of your favorite guys, tough guy. But what do you think his legacy is in the ring and obviously WWE Hall of Famer, but outside of that?
I think he was one of the great heels of his generation and performers. Absolutely. Absolutely. Trendsetter, the thing with the tights. One of the greatest bodies of all times. I just thought Rick was terrific.
When you look back, where do you rank him, like, amongst the all-time greats? Is he, like, top 20? Like, where do you put him?
You know, that's hard. But, I mean, he's in the generation that he grew up in and performed in. He'd have to be, you know, easily the top 30, maybe top 10. I mean, it's all, you'd have to go to how much money he drew and figure out it that way, because it's, you're going to like a guy and I'm going to like another guy, but the only thing to separate them is who drew more money and for how much longer.
Yeah, true. To me, if you look at just in-ring work, awesome in-ring, body-wise, awesome body, great charisma, great talker, great heel. Always loved Rick Rude, always one of my favorites. Always felt like tippy-top guy, could work, you know, the main event if you wanted, or your upper mid-card if you want him in a big-time feud, a blood feud, he could pull that off too. I always felt like Rick Rude was a top guy.
Oh, I do too. I do too. He's a fabulous performer. Worked hard every night.
Man, it would have been awesome if he could have, you know, not had that injury in 94 and kept wrestling, because that was kind of him just picking up steam, really, at that point. He was awesome at that juncture of his career. Just kind of everything was picking up for him.
Yeah. He's one of my faves.
Oh, me too, for sure. So let's end it there. Let's hit the plugs. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Two Man Power Trip. Check out the website, tmptempire.com. You can follow Kevin on Instagram at Taskmaster Talks. Kevin, what else you got going on?
Well, my wife's book, Old School, you can get it on Amazon, is starting to take off a little, so that's good. And I'm all of month of May, I'm all over the country, so come and see me. I told you every time I go out now, we have fans of our show, and they tell me we're doing a good job, so I'd like to thank you. And wherever I am in the month of May, like I said, I'm booked all of May. Come and say hello and tell me about what you like and don't like about the show.
All right. Awesome. Thank you, everybody out there, for listening. Thank you to Kevin. We'll be right back here next week for a little Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. We'll see you next week, folks. We'll be right back. This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron, and also check out the website TMPTEmpire.com and buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies, brother.